Schaefer, and I am an alcoholic. And I'm glad to be here tonight. This is the most normal part of my day today. So I'm having my kitchen floor replaced, and so my house is in unbelievable disarray. But AA is still the same, you know. Thank goodness there's still solids in my life. As of today, I have 11,691 days of sobriety. I asked Siri on the way up here how long it's been since September 17th, 1986. That was the day. It wasn't my last drink. I have to be honest with you, and I feel the need to say this at times. I had not drank since July of that year, but I thought a little marijuana maintenance was okay for. And so my sobriety date of September 18th is based on my last joint, which I smoked on September 17th. And even saying joint, I guess, shows my age. Yeah, and my home group is Tuesday Night Cranesville. And there have been rumors spreading around that we're closing. We are not closing. Please spread that rumor around, okay? It is not closing. And I'll make an announcement at the announcement time about our speaker, who is Jerome, next Tuesday. And come on out at 6 o'clock. We're having a dinner. And I have a sponsor and I have a co-sponsor. So I have all the vital statistics to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And tonight I'm going to give you what I gleaned about the eighth and ninth steps, and also some of my experience in working the eighth and ninth steps. And like I have every week, I like to look at the principles, practicing these principles in all our affairs. And of course, the more I look, the more principles I find for each step. The eighth step, which I'll start with, is reflection, forgiveness, and love. Those are the three different principles I found behind them, all very good principles and ones that I need to practice. And of course, I have the prayers for each of the steps up until the 12th step. I don't have a 12-step prayer. I'm going to have to look something up. And the prayer for the seventh step. God, help me to become willing to own my part in these matters and to clean up my side of the street. Help me to make amends to all I have harmed. Thy will be done for this person as well as for me. And of course, the step which we just heard a little bit ago is made a list of persons, of all persons we had harmed, and became willing to make amends to them all. So, of course, I always go to my dictionary because that was suggested to me in early sobriety. You know, as you're reading this stuff, go look at the real meanings of the words, not just what you think they are. So I got into the dictionary for amends. And compensate or make up for wrongdoing. I like that definition. The next one was reparation or compensation for a loss, danger, or injury of any kind. Okay. And the final one that I looked up or found was to compensate as for injury, loss, or insult. Oh, no, that was the last one. The next one's the last one. I didn't number them. The fourth one, I love. Change for the better, improve, or correct faults. So that's a pretty neat one. But, of course, I get lost when I start into these silly things, and I get lost in this internet thing and what have you, and I'm reading on amends, and I came upon this, I thought it was an interesting quote from a book written in 1903, which is a lot of years ago, by Emma C. Dowd, called Polly of Lady Gay Cottage. And I downloaded the book because it's free, and I'm reading it till I get to this quote. I love this quote, though. This she could not understand, for she had expected an apology as the very least amends he could make. Ooh, and I thought, wow, very least amends. So amends isn't just making an apology. That's the very bare minimum of making an amends, according to Polly in this book. So of course, I had the list of people from my four-step when I finally did the four-step according to the outline that I used today. I had the people that were on my resentment list. The people, fears. There's some people involved with the fears and harms other than sexual. And then, of course, the list on the harms sexually. So I had to think about what type of amends I was going to make. And I could not do that alone. I needed my sponsor to help me go through my lists of people. And we talked about what type of amend I would need to make. And of course, this was a really, really hard thing for me to do. I don't see it. There's a few really young people in here that probably don't remember Fonzie from Happy Days. Maybe you've seen him in reruns. Do you remember Fonzie when he was talking about, I was wrong? It didn't come out well. Anytime Fonzie had to use that word, he really stuttered over it. And I was a whole lot like that. My philosophy back then was pretty much that I'd rather be right than happy. You know? And boy, that one hit me with a ton of bricks. I heard it in these rooms. And you know, with the ego as big as it was, and can still be at times, you know, happiness took a backseat to being right. I'll get in an argument with you till I prove my point. You will understand the right way. Fortunately, today I don't do that quite as much as I used to. And as I was also contemplating on these steps that I've done the last 2 weeks and today, 4 and 5, 6 and 7, and 8 and 9, they're like, get ready, then do it. Get ready, then do it. Get ready, then do it. And so the 8th step is about getting ready to make these amends. And it takes I believe a lot of preparation. It did in my part. Because it's not easy to make amends. I don't, you know? Now, my original 8-step list was in 3 parts. There were those people that I was extremely happy to make amends to when the time came. Like my family, my kids, you know? And I needed to make amends to them for the fear they instilled in them when I was drinking. And for the neglect. And for the verbal abuse. Fortunately for me, I was never physically abusive, but sure was verbally abusive. And my second list was, it's okay making the amends to these people. I'll be all right with it. And those included creditors, employers, fellow employees, students in my case. And what did I owe them amends? Well, sometimes it was based on money. Other times it was on time that I stole from the employer. Another employer happened to be food. And for my students, it was not being the type of teacher that they deserve to have. You know, I can remember many mornings in my first class of the day, when I was still mostly hungover, and I was a math teacher, and I would send the kids to the board to put their homework problems on, and then I'd make them explain it. And by that time, the class was almost over, and I didn't have to do anything. But that was the most I could handle. You know, Paula's laughing back there. She remembers. I was still drinking when Paula was a student of mine. So, yeah. And then my third part of the list. It was my third list of my... Yeah, it was the third part of my list. I'm going to use a word I don't like to use from the podium. But those were the people that there was no way in hell I was ever going to make amends to them, because I figured they hurt me more than I hurt them. Well, obviously I needed a whole lot of work before I moved on to those people. And so becoming willing. Again, we've talked about willingness quite a bit in here, but I found a few more quotes from Bill on being willing. And one, this is from the 12 and 12 in Alcoholics Anonymous on page 277. Only one consideration should qualify our desire for a complete disclosure of the damage we have done. That will arise when a full revelation would seriously harm the one to whom we are making amends, or, quite as important, other people. We cannot, for example, unload a detailed account of extramarital adventuring upon the shoulders of our unsuspecting wife or husband. It does not lighten our burden when we recklessly make the crosses of others heavier. And also then from, that was from the 12 and 12 and from the big book. In making amends, we should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble. Without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. So it's going to take a real change in some of my attitude before I go out there and begin making these amends. And that's why I believe that it's so important to have done that sixth and seventh step before going on to the eighth and ninth. Because if I'm the same person that I was going out there to try to make amends to people, they don't want to hear from me. You know, they have to hear from a different kind of person than I was in my drinking days. And also on 238, I try to do these because then I see if I skipped any pages. And this I should have talked about last week, but I threw it in this week because it's so important to me personally. Self-pity is one of the most unhappy and consuming defects that we know. It is a bar to all spiritual progress and can cut off all effective communication with our fellows because of its inordinate demands for attention and sympathy. It is a maudlin form of martyrdom, which we can ill afford. The remedy? Well, let's have a hard look at ourselves and a still harder look at AA's 12 steps to recovery. When we see how many of our fellow AAs have used the steps to transcend great pain and adversity, we shall be inspired to try these life-giving principles for ourselves. And I believe it's appropriate in this step also because, you know, those people that I had on that third part of my eight-step list, the ones I wasn't ever going to make amends to, I was feeling a lot of pity for myself that I had to be associated with those people and what they had done to me, and you know, I was filled with self-pity. In fact, and I've done it to other people since it was done to me. I don't know what I was belly aching about, but I, you know, oh poor me. With some woman, and I can't even tell you who she was, but she said, "Hold on, I've got to go get some black balloons so we can celebrate this pity party the right way," you know, and I've never forgotten that, and I have offered other people black balloons at times to celebrate their pity parties, so, okay, and Bill also on willingness to do this is on page 172. Well, this is more on honesty. But the last one was also a letter that Bill wrote, and this is a letter he wrote. Only God can know what absolute honesty is. Therefore, each of us has to conceive what this great ideal may be to the best of our ability. Fallible as we are, and will be in this life, it would really be presumptuous to suppose that we could ever achieve absolute honesty. The best we can do is to strive for a better quality of honesty. Sometimes we need to place love ahead of indiscriminate factual honesty. We cannot, under the guise of perfect honesty, cruelly and not unnecessarily hurt others. One must ask, what is the best and most loving thing I can do? And this is, you know, in considering these amends that I'm going to go out and make at some point when my sponsor kicks me in the butt. It's got to be done with love. You know, love has to supersede honesty. I don't need to reveal details. I need to make my amends for what I have done, not necessarily with whom or any of that other kind of good stuff. And again, on page 203 from a grapevine, gradually we began to be able to accept the other fellow's sins as well as his virtues. We coined the potent and meaningful expression, let us always love the best in others and never fear their worst. And again, this had to apply to that those people on my third list. You know, I had to look for the good in them because there is good. You know, even if I don't like them, even if I think they did terrible by me, there is good in those people. And if I begin to think about the good in the people that I can't stand to be with, my feelings moderate. You know, they're not as intense because there is good in each and every one of us, no matter how. Now, some people are like, never mind, we won't go there. Okay, and finally, the reading from page 70 to finish up this part of the eighth step is from a grapevine back in 1961. How truth makes us free is something we AAs can well understand. It cuts the shackles that once bound us to alcohol. It continues to release us from conflicts and miseries beyond reckoning. It banishes fear and isolation. The unity of our fellowship, the love we cherish for each other, the esteem in which the world holds us, all of these are products of the truth which, under God, we have been privileged to perceive. Just how and when we tell the truth or keep silent can often reveal the difference between genuine integrity and none at all. Step 9 emphatically cautions us against misusing the truth when it states we may direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Because it points up the fact that the truth can be used to injure as well as to heal, this valuable principle certainly has a wide-ranging application to the problem of developing integrity. So that brings us to that ninth step. And my home group last week, last Tuesday night, we had a meeting on rumors and gossip, because the rumor has been running around that our meeting is closing. And it was brought up that anytime I speak about, is it true? Is it necessary? And is it kind? So I think that's also a good thing to go into the ninth step with, is running what I have to say through those filters, you know? And the principles behind the ninth step, I found three again. Amendment, okay? Freedom. Yeah, that's a big one. And justice. And my prayer for that I read each day for the ninth step. God, give me the strength and the direction to do the right thing, no matter what the consequences. Okay, back to my first column, and making amends to those people that I love, you know, that I really, truly, truly felt horrible for the way my children suffered. You know, when I'd say, okay, kids, I'm going to run up the grocery store and I'll be back with something for dinner. Yeah, you know how that turns out. And these were young teenagers at the time. And, you know, I had every intention of going to the grocery. In fact, sometimes I would go to the grocery store before I went to the bar, so that way the groceries were in the car and I'd have to get home with them. Well, you know, if they melted, thawed, went spoiled, it didn't matter after that first drink. Well, it wasn't the first drink, because I always took a can of beer with me on my way to the grocery store. You know, and then, of course, other times I'd hit the bar. Well, I'm only going to stay for two. I always went out for two. You know, well, not always, but sometimes. When I had something I thought was important, I went out for two. Yeah. In fact, that thought crossed my mind today. It was such a beautiful day, especially this morning. And I thought about how the days I would sit in the bar on a beautiful day like today, thinking about, well, you know, later on today I'm going to go home and I'm going to do this outside and I'm going to do that outside and I'm going to do the other thing outside. And by the time I went outside, it was dark and too late to do anything outside. And today it was different. I was out there at 7:30 this morning working. It was, while it was still relatively cool. Okay, so from page 294, about these people that I really care about. Love plus rationality equals growth. It seems to me that the primary object of any human being is to grow, as God intended. That being the nature of all growing things. Our search must be for what reality we can find, which includes the best definition and feeling of love that we can acquire. If the capacity of loving is in the human being, then it must surely be in his creator. Theology helps me in that many of its concepts cause me to believe that I live in a rational universe under a loving God, and that my own irrationality can be chipped away little by little. That is, I suppose, the process of growth for which we are intended. And taking a look at amends and love, you know, I've got to go out there with care. I've got to go out there with caring. I can't go out there with a chip on my shoulder. I can't go out there with the yeah buts. So those amends to my children, I was very, very glad to make them. Now they were more than just I'm sorry, you know. They were promises that I would call them if I was going to be late, not show up the next morning and having had them to call my ex-husband their father because Mom never came home last night. You know, those kind of, oh yeah, that was the first time that happened. That was not a nice one. But, you know, just making amends. Kids, if I'm going to be late, and of course this was before cell phones, so it wasn't always easy, but I did it. And of course I couldn't always get through because there was no such thing as call waiting or all that kind of stuff, you know. If they were busy, some of you kids, younger people, don't remember a busy signal on a phone, you know? Yeah, a busy signal. The phone's in use. If you don't remember a busy signal, you don't remember a party line either then. Yeah, a phone today isn't what we grew up with as far as a phone. Okay, and that second column. There were people that I hurt, but I wasn't particularly attached to those people. And some of the amends, which I didn't mention, was I had an employer that I closed it. It was a convenience store for food. And I closed many evenings. It closed at 11 o'clock at night. And they only paid me $1.10 an hour. So I figured I deserved to take, you know, eggs and milk and bread and home with me. And so when it came time to make amends to that company had already shut down. It's no longer in business. It wasn't in business back. Huh? I wonder why. Good point. This was back in the early 70s. And so how am I going to make amends? The company's out of business. Well, somebody suggested, why don't you figure out about how much you had taken from that store, which was a major task because, you know, I didn't really, and make a contribution to the food bank. And that's how I made my amends for that particular transgression, that I could not physically make the amends to the people that it happened, but I made in like. And then the next amends that was very, very hard for me to make from that second list was to my students. And I remember Neil. He had been in the Navy before he became post office. He was a McCain. He was an old timer who passed away quite a few years ago now. I think Neil died in 93. So, but I remember him saying that the people that he owed amends to when he was in the Navy, you couldn't locate them like you can today, you know. But he was willing to make amends if and when he should ever see these people again. Well, I adopted that same attitude towards my former students. And you know, I've had a lot of opportunities to make amends to my former students. They keep showing up in these rooms all the time. And some of us, you know, some of the ones, we did not get along at all. Well, this was one that, after I was sober, not my drinking days, I swear his alcoholic spirit and my alcoholic spirit clashed in that classroom. Today we're wonderful friends now that he's a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. So in that way I can make amends to the students and remain willing to. So that brought me then thinking about that dumb. Oh, I wanted to mention one other amend. There was a guy that was a friend, a family friend. And my ex-husband always said he was going to his house. Okay, well, I didn't believe him, you know. I thought he was stepping out. So, this poor guy, this was before caller ID or anything like that. When I figured my ex should be at his house, gave him enough time to get there, I would call. And I wouldn't say anything. And I would wait to hear if the guy who was supposedly there said to him, oh, there's this person calling again that isn't saying anything. And once I heard that, or would hear that, I would hang up. And sometimes he never said it. You know, I did make amends. I said, I was the person who continued to call you and not say anything and hang up. And he said, Helen, I don't remember. I said, that's okay, I did it. And I'm not doing it anymore, because you can't get away with that kind of stuff today. You know, caller ID, they know exactly who. Anyhow, we had more fun with the telephone back then. You know, I remember being told that I should have a list of 25 women's names and numbers right beside my phone at home, so that if, you know, the first one had the audacity not to answer, I could go down that list. Well, of course, they're all in my phone now. I don't have to worry about the list hanging. Just one more thing on telephones. How many of you had the 25-foot-long curled-up cord so you could walk around? Anyhow, so that brings me to that third list, and I'm one of the people that was on that third list. It was my ex-husband. And I did not want to make amends to him. In my opinion, he did way more wrong to me than I ever did to him. Well, it took a lot of prayer to become willing. And then, when I finally got a little bit of willingness, I also had to pray for opportunity. He had remarried his current wife. Still doesn't like me very much. And one time that I had called the house over something over the kids, she was rude to me on the phone. And I thought, I'm not going to create problems in his household by calling him. So I'm saying, okay, God, I'm willing to make the amends to him. Now you have to provide the opportunity. Well, I had heard at a meeting, as a matter of fact, that his wife was in the hospital and she was in intensive care and she was in very, very critical condition. And God doing his thing, I called my kids and said, your stepmother's in the hospital. I'm sure your dad could use hearing from you that he... So a couple days later, my phone rings and it's my ex-husband. And he was calling to thank me for letting the kids know. And all my thoughts were, okay, God, I asked for opportunity. I guess this must be the opportunity that I've been praying for. But I kept my amends to him very, very simple. I simply told him, you did not deserve to be treated the way I treated you often. And... He in turn said it right back to me. He said, you didn't deserve the way I treated you either. Well, the beauty of that amends, and I just love this, that probably happened in June. In November of that year, my younger son was getting married. And he called me sometime that summer and said, Mom, would you be willing to dance with Dad at our wedding dance, our bridal dance? And I said, if it's okay with your dad and his wife, I would be proud to dance with your father at your bridal dance. And we did. And it was because of having made the amends to that man that I was able to put that aside and do something for our kids, you know. So, and one of the things that comes back to me about, and I'll hurry up and be quiet here in a couple minutes. I was afraid it wasn't going to be long enough. I remember way back in my early sobriety, Bert from Edinburgh, he said what the ninth step did for him was that he could go around any corner, walking anywhere, and not have to be afraid of who he was going to run into. Boy, that had an impact on me. Obviously, I remember it a lot of years later. So, and I'll close with As Bill Sees It from page 134. Wonder what? Okay. I'll read it anyhow. Though it is traditional that our fellowship may not coerce anyone, let us not suppose, even for an instant, that we are not under constraint. Indeed, we are under enormous coercion, the kind that comes in bottles. Our former tyrant, King Alcohol, always stands ready again to clutch us to him. Therefore, freedom from alcohol is the great must that has to be achieved, else we go mad or die. And you know that doing these steps, no matter how I don't want to do parts of them, is absolutely essential, because I don't want to drink today. Thank you.
You were funny today.
And I used up all my yellow tags.
Now we have the question and answer. Is there any questions for Helen?
We're all leaving.
Ah.
Thank Two. God it's not Kevin.
Thanks, Helen. I'm Laura. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Laura.
So when you were making amends to your students, did you tell them everything? Or was it just
Shortened version.
Short version. It depends on the gender of the student, too. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, that's... I mean, Paula probably knows as much about me as anyone else, and she was one of the ones from my drinking days. And Mark, who was also in her class, is also a member of the fellowship. Now, Mark doesn't know. Yeah, he probably does know about the same amount because we did some drinking together and knew the same people. But yeah, no, it depends on the person.
Well, and do you find also that you made living amends so that after you were sober and you had students, did you treat the students better and that you felt was a living amends as well?
Well, yeah, but it wasn't amends to the person, that the people that I had done it to, you know? I never had to do that. Put the homework on the board unless it was really part of the lesson plan. That was my fallback, you know? It worked, but... I know that I became the kind of teacher that the best kind of teacher I could be. But there were no living amends for those kids that were subjected to me as their teacher. And then I'm going to tell one more funny story. I had a student teacher who was horrible. I mean, I never had another student teacher. That's how bad he was. I was sober. And probably 3 or 4 years ago, I ran into him in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And since then, we have become friends. But he was in the throes of his alcoholism at that time. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else?
Thanks, Helen. That's great. My sponsor told me that there's a person on the list that I did not need to make an amends to. I was all prepared to do it. He didn't think that I should. Has that ever happened to you?
Yes, absolutely. The last fourth and fifth step that I did, and it was over a fear. And it was my co-sponsor I did the fifth step with, and I talked to her about the amends at that point, and she said, no, you will, that person is dangerous to make an amends to. No matter what you say, it's going to be misinterpreted. So yes, I have been told not to, that I don't owe any amends.
Now, there are people in Syracuse that I had to make amends to when I was living in Erie. And my sponsor insisted that I make a face-to-face amends with him rather than writing a letter, making a phone call. Do you subscribe to that as well?
I haven't run into that situation, but if at all possible, a face-to-face amends, I believe, is the absolute best. We tell so much about ourselves through body language, through eye contact, that anytime I believe in with sponsees, even not necessarily always with amends, that I like to see them on a regular basis, because yeah, face to face is the best.
And finally, my brothers did not want me to make an amends to them. They didn't want to know anything about anything. and I had really kind of prepared to do this. And I was a little disappointed that we couldn't have a conversation, but neither one of them wanted anything. They just said, you know, I don't know if you've experienced this either. They just said, we love you, we're glad you're not drinking, and glad you're doing this. So it was quite an interesting thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That wasn't a question. Let me make it a question. Have you experienced that?
Well, almost with my ex-husband, it was very... You know, you didn't deserve to be treated the way I treated you. I didn't go into any detail. I wasn't trying to reestablish a relationship with him, except that we were the parents of the same children. So, yeah. Thanks
well, thank
for
you,
changing
Helen.
To a question.
Thank you, Helen.
Am I done?
No.
Thank you.
No cabin. No cabin.